Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to this news episode of the Free Cities Podcast. This is where you get a chance to listen to what goes on a little bit more behind the scenes, especially with reference to things that are going on in the news that affect free cities. This episode, I'm going to be talking about what's been going on in Venezuela recently. This episode is a response to a Free Cities Foundation ambassador call that we had a couple of days ago, on which we were joined by two Venezuela experts to discuss the situation currently in the country and what it might mean for the future. The conversation focuses on the reported capture of Nicolas Maduro, of course, and what this moment could mean in practice for Venezuela. We look at whether this signals a real political transition, how people inside the country are reacting, and what it might mean for free cities projects in the country and other special economic zones. We draw on first-hand experience, of course, and long-term perspective, and we explore how free cities could fit into Venezuela's next chapter and what the shift might imply for potential residents, investors, and pretty much anyone watching the future of autonomous governance unfold. Our two experts on the call were Tim Stern. Tim's project is on the island of Margarita in Venezuela. It's called Crypto City. He has special economic zone status. It's a very large project. I've spoken to Tim on this podcast before, so look back in the history to learn more about that. He's basically living in country on Margarita Island and is very well connected in the country. Our other guest is Jose Cordero. If you've ever been to our conferences in Prague, then you'll have met Jose. He's a Venezuelan economist slash futurist. Right, let's get on with it. The focus of the call, as I said, was the same headline everyone's been seeing in early January, which was the capture of Venezuela's president, Nicolas Maduro. On the call, I suppose it was described very plainly as a stealth operation by US Delta Force that resulted in his kidnapping. There wasn't much time spent debating the legality of that phrasing in the beginning. The conversation moved almost immediately to the consequences. And the first person to speak was Tim Stern, who's been on the ground in Venezuela building Crypto City for nearly 3 years. Now, bear in mind the island of Margarita is somewhat of a bubble compared to the rest of Venezuela, but it is still Venezuela. Tim didn't start with the politics. He started with the moment when he heard, he said, it was quite funny. Picture this, being in bed, sleeping peacefully and having your phone on the little bedside table beside you. Suddenly, it goes absolutely wild. Bzz, 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 bzz. 17 missed calls, 18 missed calls. He said he got loads of messages saying that they were bombarding Caracas. And their immediate response was to try and put together some kind of press relief because they have a lot of investors, obviously. And within 2 hours, the story flipped almost immediately. Tim said, until we had a statement done, we already got the message that Maduro is out. Now, his reaction was pure disbelief. He stressed how fast it all happened. This was like 2 hours, he said. Crazy shit. And if you know Tim, that's the kind of the way he speaks. Because of that, we scrapped the statement and we decided to wait. What happened next? Well, obviously, once again, Tim's words, Venezuela is fucking booming. Excuse the words. But I'm using that because, just to give the gravitas of the situation. For example, with regards to, say, real estate on Margarita, which is Tim's involved in, he said agents told him that this is the first time in their lives they have nothing to offer because we sold so many houses and apartments in the last 13 days. He repeated the time frame like he couldn't quite believe it himself. Imagine that. It's like 13 days ago, we had the president of Venezuela snatched by the Americans. Now we're already running out of apartments to sell. He clarified that getting a sort of $20,000 or $30,000 apartment on the beach in Margarita now is completely out of the question. Gone. not existing anymore. Then he moved on to what several people on the call have treated as one of the clearest signals of reopening, which are flights. Tim said that they've already got flights back to Caracas from all the European countries starting on the 1st of February. Iberia, TAP and other, I think Laser and Plus Ultra. And then he added what felt like the headline moment. Yesterday, they announced direct flights from Miami to Caracas. He didn't even know exactly how long it had been since they've had those flights from America to Venezuela. I think maybe 20 years, maybe 15 years, he said. Later in the call, this widened beyond Caracas. There was explicit mention of flights returning to Margarita itself. This wasn't just capital reopening. It was the island where Crypto City is based becoming reachable again for the very first time in years. Tim then did something that I can't show you here, but I can tell you. He asked to share his screen just to show us how crazy things have got. He basically showed us his inbox for sort of people wanting to sign up to Crypto City. And he said, this is all the people entering on the homepage of Crypto City. Every one of these messages is a name and an email address who wants to come and visit. This is just yesterday. And he said, I can scroll for 10 minutes. 800 or 900 people have entered on the homepage. Summing up, in Tim's words, it's bonkers. It's crazy. I'm absolutely overloaded. I'm on the phone 24/7. And then he delivered what you could call the emotional anchor of the discussion. Tim's words, this was the point of no return, he said. This change is going to be the start of an absolute bonanza here in Venezuela. Okay. He did pull back from the certainty. Obviously, we're a little bit in the dark going forwards. We don't know exactly what's happening now, he said. Is there going to be a change? Is there going to be a working agreement with the acting president? Is the ex-vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, is there going to be a total transition? And then, obviously, nobody is 100% sure, but judging by the response from the outside world, you can conclude a few things. Okay, Jose Cordero came on next. Jose's reaction was immediate and emotional, of course, as a Venezuelan. Fantastic news, he said. It only took 2 hours to capture this criminal and send him to prison in New York. He didn't hedge, he said. All Venezuelans, we are very happy. He then zoomed out to the scale of the national trauma. About a third of the population is already outside of Venezuela. He gave numbers between 8 and 9 million who've left Venezuela and pointed out that in Spain alone, there were over 500,000 who are originally from Venezuela. Jose also warned against thinking this was the end. This is not the end, he said. This is just the beginning. He explained that control still rested with the Chavistas. They have the arms. They have the army. The transition, in his view, will take time. That led into questions of legitimacy, which became one of the most serious parts of the call, I would say. Even people who hated Maduro might be uncomfortable with foreign intervention like this. Venezuela has, well, I suppose, a deep sensitivity to colonialism. Jose answered directly, the opposition is very happy, he said, because we couldn't do this ourselves. We don't have the arms. We're peaceful people. He contrasted that with the regime. The state, obviously, is the monopoly on arms. He estimated public sentiment quite bluntly. I would say that 90% of Venezuelans are happy that the USA helped us. That's Jose's opinion. He then outlined what he said were three reasons Trump gave publicly for the intervention: drugs, petroleum, and immigration. He described Venezuela as being controlled as a drug cartel. He linked mass immigration to regional instability, especially in Colombia. And on oil, he said something that came up repeatedly later in the call. Before, it was given away to Cuba for free. Now, he said, no discounts, free market prices for petroleum. From there, the conversation shifted into free cities' specific risks in the country. One concern raised was whether Crypto City's special economic zone status on Margarita could be revoked, because it was granted under the previous regime, something we have had a version of happening in Honduras when regimes change. Tim Stern's answer was calm. He said politically that the new direction was a free market direction for increased productivity and to attract investment. So in his words, why would they eliminate special economic zones? More importantly, he explained how he had built resilience into Crypto City. Years ago, he said he faced the decision to get permissions for the project the legal way, which meant hundreds of pages of studies, port studies, environmental surveys, underwater coral, profiles for the harbour, etc., etc. The alternative, of course, was paying a few under-the-counter dollars and then moving faster. But he chose the legal route, fortunately. And he said in the current concert, he said, because we always knew if one day change comes and they're going to check, and if you can't present them with the studies, you're basically in trouble, because they could present them. He said, we are really, really relaxed about anything changing. But he was pretty sure that why would you change the special economic zone status of Crypto City on Margarita? Anyway, energy security was the next major issue. Questions were raised about Venezuela's power. Tim answered locally. He said he couldn't necessarily speak for the whole of Venezuela, but on Margarita, the governor of Margarita had stated that they had, quote, energy and gasoline and food for the next 3 or 4 months. He explained Margarita also had two big gas turbines supplying most of its electricity locally. He added some context as well, saying, pointing out that for a long time, they haven't actually had power outages, and he acknowledged that he lives in one of the better parts of the island, let's say, but in the past it was much worse and they used to have outages every single day. He also said that at Crypto City we do our own energy production because we don't want to be dependent. Right, the call then turned outwards towards capital flow. Tim described being contacted by groups from Dubai and New York claiming to have hundreds of millions, or even one guy, $1 billion to invest. It's crazy, he said. It's really a country which has been closed down for 20 years. Chinese investment came up repeatedly in the call. Tim said that the Chinese had invested heavily, particularly in infrastructure and oil. Jose confirmed this, saying China was the biggest investor in Venezuela right now and that most of the money had gone into infrastructure. Both of them agreed that China was being cautious publicly, denouncing events, but taking little action. Trying not to jeopardize existing investments was the way that they looked at that. Right. Now, towards the end of the call, the conversation widened beyond Venezuela and moved to Honduras. We had Alex Ugorji on the phone, who lives in Ciudad Morazan. And if you may remember, the last news episode we had was on what's happened recently in Honduras in the elections. So we got a bit of an update from Alex. There's similarities with Venezuela. They're both politically messy transitions happening in parallel with real consequences for special economic zones. Context matters here. On the previous ambassador call, he focused on Honduras. And at that time, the general election result still hadn't been finalized. Weeks had passed without a clear outcome, which had already raised concerns about institutional credibility. But by the time of this call, there was finally a declared winner, and we all wanted to know what that actually meant on the ground. So Alex explained that while a new president had been elected, and in his words, it's not over until the fat lady sings, she's opened her mouth and getting ready, but she hasn't fully sung yet. The implication was that the transition looked likely, but the outgoing administration might still try to delay, negotiate, or create noise right up until the end. He explained why tensions were so high. The current administration had reason to be afraid of losing power. The previous president had already been extradited to the United States and was facing life in prison. And there was a very real fear that retaliation could follow once the new government took over. The fear, he said, was shaping the behavior of the people that are still in office. He also referenced a series of actions taken by the outgoing government that were now under scrutiny, including the declaration that the ZAs were unconstitutional. alleged requests for bribes and pressure placed on the Supreme Court. From his perspective, the legal case for the ZAs had been handled improperly, and the current administration knew that once power shifted, those decisions could be revisited and probably would. Despite that, Alex said the international environment had changed. The US and neighbouring countries had spoken out clearly, and the international community was not backing any attempt to overturn or stall the election result. In his assessment, while there might still be noise, it was extremely unlikely that the outgoing government could actually stop the transition, especially without military support. When he was asked what this meant for special economic zones, specifically, as in the ZAs, Alex gave a typically nuanced answer from Alex. He explained that while there had been three major candidates, none of them were existential threats to the ZAs in the way that the current socialist government had been. As long as the Socialist Party lost, he said, we can make a deal with them, in his words. He emphasised that any durable agreement would require congressional support anyway, meaning cooperation across parties was unavoidable. He also made the point that, practically speaking, personality mattered less than incentives. One of the leading figures, Tito, was described as someone who loves to build, loves infrastructure, and loves visibility. From that angle, there was a plausible path where ZA projects like Prospera and Ciudad Morazan could continue, even thrive, because they were aligned with the new government's desire to show tangible economic progress. There was also acknowledgement that the election itself had been messy. It took nearly the maximum legally allowed time to declare a winner, and that only after significant international pressure. Alex noted that this created controversy and suspicion, of course, especially given public comments from Donald Trump supporting one candidate, which appeared to swing prediction markets dramatically. But even with that controversy, the overall direction was seen as favourable compared to where things have been. Right, the key takeaway from the Honduras part of the discussion mirrored Venezuela in an important way. Transitions were not clean. They were tense, legally contested, and emotionally charged. But the direction of travel mattered more than the noise. In Honduras, as in Venezuela, the expectations were that a shift away from socialist governance would create more room for negotiated settlements around special economic zones rather than outright hostility. By the time we wrapped up the Honduras segment, which was the last one on the call, the mood was cautious but optimistic. Not certainty, not celebration, but a sense that both Venezuela and Honduras were moving into a phase where deals, legal frameworks, and negotiated coexistence were again possible. So there you have it. Good news from both countries, as far as I'm concerned. Certainly, the people we're speaking to are very excited about Venezuela, but I think that will peter out, obviously, over the next months as reality hits home. Certainly, Tim Stern is saying that interest in Crypto City has exploded, and we could imagine that the same sentiment could be mirrored all over the country. Hopefully. Anyway, thanks for listening. I hope you've got a bit of information from this call. These are private calls that we have at the Free Cities Foundation with our ambassadors and with experts that we know around the world dealing with free cities. I hope I've brought you information that is useful on your Free Cities journey, and I hope you'll be back for the next news episode. Thank you, and see you next time.